From Stuttgart, Germany, I'm Suzette Gorlat, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Laughter is good for your health, but laughter and humor can be hard to find in a refugee camp. University of Oklahoma Film and Media Studies professor Andrew Horton followed a group of clowns who entertained Syrian refugees in Greece.
It was so important for me to see how laughter and these people could make these young people enjoy life again.
I'll talk with Horton about his new movie, Laughter Without Borders. But first, I'll talk with Joshua Landis about the latest news from Syria.
The real problem here is that there is a race on to take Raqqa. The Kurds want to take it, the Turks want to take it, and Assad and the Russians want to take it.
That's all coming up after news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlat. Joshua Landis, we need to do a Syria update. Thank you for coming back in the studio. It seems the news coming out of Syria this week was that Russian aircraft, it seems by accident, bombed Syrian fighters that U.S. personnel were working with, were training. There's still a lot of confusion about this. Russia seems to be pointing the finger at the United States, saying that they gave the coordinates, but the U.S. says that, you know, we don't need to divide ourselves at this point. We need to focus on ISIS. It seems like there are a lot of players in this situation. You've got the Russian bombers, you've got Syrian government fighters, you have the U.S. there fighting or training other militants. So can you make some sense out of this for us?
I will try. The real problem here is that there is a race on to take Raqqa, which is the capital of ISIS on the Euphrates, in the north of Syria, just east of Aleppo, south of Turkey, and just south of Rojava, which is this new emerging Kurdish state in northern Syria. And America has an embarrassment of riches, which is it has three offers on the table to take Raqqa. The Kurds want to take it, the Turks want to take it, and Assad and the Russians want to take it. And America is trying to balance between these three people, that three interests that it has to keep on its side in a way. And so this is making it very difficult to come up with a plan, and it's extremely difficult to balance all these actors who deeply distrust and dislike each other. And they've met in this little triangle where the Syrian troops have been racing to cut off the Turks so that they can't take Raqqa. The Kurds don't want the Turks to take Raqqa. And they're all sitting there moving their troops as quickly as they can to this common little point. And they've met. And that's the trouble. It's explosive because each side doesn't want the other to get a jump on them towards Raqqa and to take all this ISIS territory.
Well, so it seems like ISIS wins in this scenario, right? There are too many players, too many differing opinions. They're all there supposedly to do the same thing. But I mean, when you have really only 12 to 15,000 ISIS fighters in the area, I mean, these massive militaries can't manage this. What's going on?
No, they can't manage it. And that's where the United States is expected to be the sort of grand poobah of orchestrating this battlefield. But the United States doesn't know what it wants. We have a new president. He just got a 30-day plan that he got demanded from Mattis and his other generals that came in the door 2 days ago. We don't know, us analysts, don't know what's in that report. We suspect he's going to go with the Kurds because they're there, they're ready, they're trained up. But this infuriates Turkey. And so this is why there is tension amongst these three players, and you don't know whether they're hitting each other on purpose, by mistake. And the United States is sitting there waiting for Trump to come out and announce his plan.
Well, Joshua, very quickly, we reported on this back in September, but a UN report came out this week about the humanitarian convoy that was bombed by the Syrian government back in September. And not only was it bombed and killed 14 aid workers and many others, the UN has found that the Syrian government did it deliberately and is one of the many attacks that is suspected to be a war crime. Can you just tell us very quickly what we might see coming out of that?
Yes. Well, this is the whole Aleppo problem. Now, that bombing of the aid convoy came just days after the United States mistakenly bombed a Syrian position in Deir ez-Zor, killing about 60 Syrian soldiers and so forth. And Syria and Russia both screamed bloody murder and said America did this intentionally. And America apologized profusely and said, no, we didn't. And this is the, and so this attacking the aid convoy came right after it. And it was also about Aleppo, because America was condemning Aleppo, was helping rebels in Aleppo get arms, and the Syrian government felt you're trying to hurt us and stop us from taking our own city back. And so there is tons of bad feelings. And of course, we know that America and Syria don't like each other, because President Obama had asked for Assad to step aside and regime change in Syria. So there is no love lost. And they're both poking at each other and trying to make statements about you want to cooperate with, you know, if you want don't want your aid convoys bombed, you have to be nice to me. And that's, you know, this is the difficult terrain in Syria.
Complicated situation continues, Joshua. Thank you for being here to help us make some sense out of it. Appreciate it.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Suzette. Thank you.
Love to hear your thoughts about this discussion or answer any questions you might have. Leave your comments in the Worldview section of KGOU.org or like us, follow us, and interact with us on Twitter at WorldviewsKGOU and at Suzette Corlett. Next, I'll talk with Andrew Horton. He's a professor in the Department of Film and Media Studies at the University of Oklahoma. His new film, Laughter Without Borders, is about clowns who entertain children in Syrian refugee camps in Greece. I'm Suzette Corlett, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Corlett. Andrew Horton is a filmmaker and professor of film and media studies at the University of Oklahoma. His new film follows a group of clowns who try to bring smiles to kids' faces in Syrian refugee camps in Greece. Andy Horton, welcome to Worldviews.
So happy to be here.
Andy, I've known you for years, pretty much my whole entire career at OU. Every time I see you, you tell me a joke. So we're starting with a joke.
Well, we're talking about Greece and refugees, so a Greek joke. People ask me, because I go to Greece every year and speak Greek and so forth, what's the Greek problem that they're having, the economy and everything? And I said, it's very simple. Think of it this way. One Italian, a serenade. Two Italians, an opera. Three Italians, a military retreat. One German, a scientist. Two Germans, a beer garden. Three Germans, a war. One Englishman, a fool. Two Englishmen, a club. Three Englishmen, a colony. One Greek, one prime minister. Two Greeks, two prime ministers. Three Greeks, three prime ministers. That's their problem.
Okay. That is a very interesting cross-cultural comparison with humor.
Stereotypes with humor.
There you go. But that's an interesting point when you said stereotypes with humor, because often we tell jokes that are based on some sort of stereotypes. And so how about that? I mean, first of all, why humor? What brought you into humor? Why do you use so much humor in the work that you do? What does it do for us?
In my life and my teaching, I'm in the film department. I love teaching a course in global film comedy, 15 weeks, 15 countries. The exam is easy. Choose your three favorite films and explain why in relation to the countries. So when an Oklahoma student who's never been anywhere says, my favorite is the Bosnian comedy that won the Oscar, No Man's Land. Two soldiers going into battle. One says to the other, what's the difference between optimist, pessimist? And he says, it's easy. Pessimist says things are as bad as they can be. The optimist says they can be a lot worse. And for the rest of the film, everything gets worse. Bosnian humor. I say, you want to understand a country? find out what makes them laugh. Laughter crosses borders, and that's what we're talking about.
Well, certainly laughter is universal. Everyone laughs, mm-hmm. right? But we don't always laugh at the same things. That is what is interesting when you study cross-cultural humor, international, you know, issues and what makes people laugh. And we've had comedians on the show before. We've had guests and visitors that study global comedy. And those are always my favorite shows because it's always so interesting to hear about what makes people laugh. So what are the dividing lines? What is funny in some places and not funny in others? That stereotypical joke you told, could you tell that joke in Greece?
Well, yes. Yeah, the Greeks are able to laugh at themselves, and that's part of what humor is about. And by the way, medically, they prove that laughing, you live longer. That is part of it. The Russia at the end of the 20th century, when communism had collapsed and everything, and they did a survey of the most popular image of a face in the 20th century. The most popular image was Charlie Chaplin. Not Stalin or Karl Marx or anyone else. So that says a lot. And who was Charlie Chaplin? He was funny, but comedy crosses the line with the sad and the tragic too, as Socrates points out with Aristophanes in the Symposium. But look at Chaplin. What's he doing at the end of most of his films? He's alone, he doesn't have money, and he's walking down the road.
And this is somehow funny to us.
Well, no, he's given us the laughter. But then he's ending
then
he's continuing life, you know.
Moving on to the next joke, is
yeah,
that it?
Yeah.
So we just move from one from one joke to the next. I mean, you said laughter, you know, makes us healthier. Mm-hmm. I mean, study after study after study has shown that humor is a method for de-stressing. It is definitely something that is good for our health. But again, as I talked about, some things really aren't funny. And we're talking about war. We're talking about refugees. We're talking about very difficult subjects. So how do we work, you know, funny lines into that?
We're talking about my film that'll premiere, Laughter Without Borders. It's about clowns without borders, which began a few years ago. 12 countries send clowns to troubled places in the same spirit. What they're winking to is Doctors Without Borders. And a year ago, when Syrian refugees were coming through Turkey and landing on the Greek island of Lesbos, the news said American clowns are there to help them laugh and enjoy life. I immediately went online and found the American clowns and got in touch with them by email and then by phone. And then I went to New York and met them, saying, I go to Greece every year. I speak Greek. I love comedy. I have to make a documentary about you all. They said, well, thank you. But the clowns rotate. And this year, 2016, it's Swedish clowns in northern Greece. They put me in touch, got in touch, and with one of my alums, film alums from OU, Brady Foster, who has his own film company in Oklahoma and has been to Greece a number of times and loves it too, we did a fundraiser in Oklahoma City, and wonderful people in Oklahoma helped contribute. OU contributed, Clark Stroud and others, and we made the film. And it was so important for me to see how laughter and these people could make these young people enjoy life again.
So the focus is on children, obviously. And
the focus is children. But as you will see in the film, the parents are there too, and they're smiling and laughing. And there's scenes where a burqa-covered mother hands the child to one of the clowns and said, I'll come back later. And he said, life doesn't get any better.
So what did you learn from this project in terms of the things you already know, that laughter is important and we need to laugh at ourselves? But what did you learn through this project?
I've been, of course, studying comedy in many ways, film, TV, life, and taught a wonderful course with Joanna Rapp, a dream course here at OU a few years ago called Laughter, in which we had experts come in, an expert on laughter and religion, rating the religions. The top of the list for laughter is Buddhism, because the Buddhists don't believe in God, sin, punishment, hell, but the others do. And we did laughter and death. Alan Klein came, and he explained what it's like to help people at the end of their lives deal with laughter. And we did all of that. What did I learn this time around meeting the clowns? A, that the four clowns, and that's typical of what the Clowns Without Borders do, they try to send two women, two men. The American clowns did that. With the Swedes, they wound up with three women and one man. But none of the people who were there are clowns. These are all human beings who want to help. They are basically, three of the four are actors, but they had to put on a red nose and go out there and do their thing.
That's Andrew Horton. He teaches in the Department of Film and Media Studies at the University of Oklahoma. After the break, we'll talk about humor as a coping mechanism. I'm Suzette Gralat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gralat, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Our guest today is Film and Media Studies Professor Andrew Horton from the University of Oklahoma. His new film, Laughter Without Borders, follows a group of clowns as they play with children at Syrian refugee camps in Greece. Now, clowns have been in the news lately, Andy, as not being so funny.
Sad.
So tell, the impact of that is pretty significant, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that clowns have always been a symbol of something funny, something that brings, you know, that enlightens our life and enriches our life and that it makes us laugh. And although there have always been kids scared of clowns, too. It's a little freaky. But now, I mean, adults are scared of clowns. Do you foresee that this type of project, the Clowns Without Borders and this type of work will transition perhaps to just focusing more on the comedy and less on the appearance of clowns showing up and working with children?
I think, and we want our films to get out and people to see it everywhere, to get the idea that this is the opposite of what these negative clowns are doing. People who see the film and see what they're doing, they have a tear in their eye and a smile and say, how wonderful to see the faces of the children that we are seeing. And each clown does something different. One of the clowns would paint red noses on all the children. And another would lift them up in the air. Another would play a ukulele and help them sing. They would spend the time, and you would see the community. The parents are agreeing to all of this. And you're saying, this is positive energy. This has to continue.
It's not only a distraction from what they're having to deal with, but it's giving them a coping mechanism, perhaps,
yes,
a way to, you know, tools to work through very difficult situations. Is there any connection to being able to address this problem in some other way other than just giving them a distraction? I'm just curious.
Yeah. Well, I have felt strongly that we have to pay more attention to humor and comedy. I would love to see several courses required to get out of American high school. One would be you have to learn a Native American language because we've been in New Zealand and our children had to learn Maori. It's required. Hello. That would be one course. But the other one would be comparative humor to that children should learn from the beginning that how important it is. Remember, since we're talking Greece, Aristophanes came up with Lysistrata, the sex strike comedy that was wonderful. It didn't stop the war, but it got people going.
It brings attention to issues.
It does.
It draws our attention to things we need to face.
Winked to Aristophanes last year with Chirac, his film about blacks killing blacks in Chicago, and he made it totally Lysistrata, the black women go on a sex strike. And it starts with a statistic, more blacks have killed each other in Chicago than American soldiers died in Iraq and Afghanistan for the number of years we were fighting. Humor, we have to get the word out more. People don't get that humor is so important. So I think it's something that's got to be taught and get the word out there. And the fact that there are 12 nations, I see that will double in the next couple of years. I'm sure there'll be 24 nations with clowns. And once again, these are not clowns. These are people who want to help. And in my film, they explain that. One says, I get depressed reading the news. What can I do? This is one thing I can do.
Well, you and I collaborated on a program last year, a year or two ago, where we brought in an expert who talked about global humor, wrote the book, The Humor Code, mm-hmm. Peter McGraw.
Yes.
Really, really nice interview that we did with him. But at the time, we asked the question of kind of like, what's funny and what isn't, and particularly across borders. He argued that it has to be a benign violation, that you can't, I mean, as you're referencing Spike Lee's work and other mm-hmm. Things, I mean, there are things that people might not find funny, right, about refugees, or as we were talking with Peter McGraw, sexual assault or mm-hmm. war, yeah. conflict, those sorts of mm-hmm. things that aren't funny. But so they have to be benign violations. Mm-hmm. But that's really tricky. I mean, you as a humorist, as a comedian, as a screenwriter that focuses on comedy, you know, how do you know where that line is?
Well, it's kind of fun the way things come together in life. I'm just back from 2 weeks ago at the 22nd Buster Keaton Festival in Michigan, in his town where he used to live, Muskegon. And you realize, hello, slapstick is important. Watching people fall, it's someone else who slipped on the banana, not you, and it's funny. Buster is called Buster because his father threw him across the stage. So slapstick is part of what the clowns do. And just the image we have on the poster of one of the clowns lifting children up in the air, there's a line of children standing behind. They all want to be lifted up into the air.
And just to give a picture of this, it's lifting him up in the air with their feet. The clown's
feet.
Laying
yes.
on the ground with using yeah. his feet, what we call an airplane, right? The kids
exactly.
are like airplaning on the clown's feet.
Yeah. They would average an hour of lifting them up in the air. And, you know, 20 kids waiting yeah. to be done that. So humor isn't just a joke. Humor takes a variety of forms. And it can also get you thinking. One thing I often do at the beginning of a comedy class is to ask two important questions. When you were a child, who made you laugh in your family? Your crazy uncle? Your grandmother? Who was funny? And then they explain the family humor. And then the second question is, what do you want on your tombstone? It's your last joke. And I give examples. Larry Gelbart wrote MASH, Tootsie, and everything, and his tombstone says, finally a plot. And none of the students have thought about a tombstone, or they say, I want to be cremated. I say, yeah, fine, but have a tombstone too. And they come up with good things. And our son wanted Warner Brothers. That's all, folks.
So as we end, Andy, yeah. and I almost hate to end here, but let's just say it. What's going on your tombstone?
Mine comes from Preston Sturges, the great writer that I've done a book on from the 1930s and 40s. Everything was perfect except for a few details.
Okay.
And yours?
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to have to think about that. I'm going to have to think about that. Get back to me later. I think that's what's going on the tombstone. All right. Well, Andy, thank you so much for being here and making us laugh, as always. Thank you.
We have to.
You've been listening to my conversation with Andrew Horton. He's a professor in the Department of Film and Media Studies at the University of Oklahoma. You can find more information online at kgou.org and subscribe to our weekly podcast. Worldviews is produced in partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Katie Holland prepares our research, Sam Dupre produced the show, and Jacob McClellan edited this interview. For Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Gorlott.